Hey guys, and welcome to this episode of the No Bullshit Anxiety Talk Show. I am struggling greatly to record this intro, so I'm going to do one take wonder here and just leave it as best as I can. It's been a while since we recorded one. The anxiety support summit was crazy, but good crazy, with lots of learning, and now it's over and life goes on. And I'm excited to share this episode with you today with Dr. Donna Novak. Donna is a psychologist with a passion for helping people get to the root of their problems, which is extremely important, so they can live the life they truly want and, of course, deserve. She does a lot of work with families and couples, helping them form deeper and stronger connections, an area most of us, if we're being honest, could do with a little assistance with. We discuss it all throughout the interview, as well as the crisis of identity with regards anxiety, the need to push past your comfort zone, and so much more. It was an absolute pleasure to connect with Dr. Donna, and I'm sure you're going to learn a lot from her. And that is my little rant. If you do enjoy it, please do take a minute to leave a five-star review and comment to help others find it. It would mean the world. And with that, I'm going to shut up. Enjoy the show. Give a little bit of an introduction to yourself and the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am in private practice. So I'm a group practice owner. We are currently three psychologists, one of them psychologist to be. We do a lot of family work here. And so something that we really believe in is the importance of working with the whole family. So whether even if a mom calls in, then we're going to want to work with understanding like the bigger picture. So if a mom calls in for their child, we're also going to want to work with the whole family. So we're going to want to work and help them in their marriage and all the way around. I personally work a lot with adults and anxiety. We also work a lot with couples. So it's something that I really believe is really making sure that we're going to the root of what's going on and that we're not really just staying on the surface. So many times anxiety and things that come up for us, we just want to kind of talk about the content. And for me, it's really important that we see the interconnections in our lives. So if they're coming in and they're talking about something for work and anxiety that's coming up for them, I also know that if I dive into that I'm also helping them be better able to tolerate, you know, things coming up with their children or things in their marriage. There's such an interconnection. I really believe that. And it's a big part of like the values and the mission of our practice.
Wow. That's really, really interesting. I believe it is my belief that parents hold, like probably have the strongest influence over their child's recovery or play, you know, like they it can go one or two ways. The parents can be dismissive and not helpful at all, maybe because they just haven't been educated on it. I'm sure it's not out of a lack of love, but it's such a confusing area, the thread for parents. And more often than not, from what I see it, that it ends up like they want to be helpful, but they often make things worse for their children. So I think it's kind of cool that you bring the whole family in. How does that kind of run? Are you dealing with like all sorts of crap in front of you like that? That would take pretty slick skills.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So we post a blog every week. And this week we were talking about why we need to include the family in child therapy. And I did a video and I was talking about how if a child has anxiety and they're coming in with anxiety and the parents don't work on their own anxiety, what ends up happening is that they don't have the capacity and those internal resources to actually help their child in the way that they would want to. Mm-hmm. Because they are stuck in their head. They get into all the what ifs. They get into their own kind of overwhelm. And so it's so important. So when we think about working with the family, you know, that play therapy or that kind of child focused model, the child probably already feels like there's so much wrong with them. The child, the teen, the whatever it may be, it can even be an adult coming in, you know, but all the problems are the mom, you know, all the problems are the dad or, you know, the woman or the man. So again, so when there's so much focus on one person and like finger, like everyone's like pointing their finger on one person, we're missing such a big part all the way around. And so I was talking about how if we are able to work with the mom on or the woman to deal with the anxiety she's feeling, like let's look at what we're going through right now with COVID. If we're able to help her deal with all the what ifs in her head and all that anxiety, then she's going to have so much more space to ask the right questions of her children, to ask them the questions that will help them kind of think of things differently so they don't get as stuck in their head, to problem solve, to come up with ways to kind of calm down whatever's coming up for them, their fears, their worries, their insecurities. Like we'd be able to help her child. But if she's anxious and we're just focusing on how to fix the child or the teen, then we're missing such a big part of like the bigger picture. And that's something that we really believe in and something I was talking about in a video today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super important. I think it's great that you're kind of taking that approach to it, because so often if the environment at home and, you know, again, children can range from, with this stuff, they can range from, I don't know how young the children you'd see are, but they can go up to 60-year-old men who very much accomplished career. And their parents might not even be with them anymore. And it's still just looming over them big time. Do you ever get, so like children come into you, maybe they're, so I don't know what the age group is, but like, do you ever get people come into you and go like, I'm dealing with this? And in my experience, a lot of people dealing with anxiety disorders, that they hold resentment towards family members. Mm-hmm. And as you say, right, if you can't, like if the environment is still shit that you go back into on a daily basis, it's very difficult to make progress. So do you ever get children that come in and, you know, their parents would have to send them in, I would assume, if they're children. Or I don't know, like, what the legality is around that, if they just sit with you or sit in the waiting room or whatever. But even with older young adults that come in and it transpires that they have a lot of resentment towards their parents for, you know, things that, they, you know, like, our all parents are human, right? They're all, there's no a booklet to follow to do this job right, and it's the most difficult job in the world, I would imagine. But do you ever go, okay, we need to bring in your parents to the adult, as opposed to like saying where the parent comes to you and goes, okay, we have to sit down and we have to discuss this with you, or we have to discuss this with the kid, which is a little bit easier. But does it ever work the other way around?
It sometimes does. I mean, if it's accessible and it's something that the person wants to bring in their family, we're really open to that. But I think that there's so much resentment and there's so much of that stuff that can totally be worked through while keeping the family in mind and while keeping all those interconnections, even if you just work with the adult. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to bring them in, right? But it's something that we can definitely do. And sometimes we do with adults and, you know, bring in their parents, and it's something that that we can definitely do. But I think that with resentments, what happens is, like, what is anxiety, right? We're focused on the past and we're focused on the future. That's all that stuff, right? We just struggle with being present, struggle with being in the moment. And all that past stuff, that's it's your comfort zone, essentially. It's your comfort zone to stay stuck in everything that happened to me externally is why I'm suffering right now. Everything that was done to me, right? Because there's a lack of ownership and it's kind of comfortable. Ownership is scary, right? Ownership is vulnerable. Ownership is scary. And so many people hold on to it. And as a means of like, I am this way because my parents, I am this way because this was done to me or that, or, and I'm not trying, I mean, of course, there's a lot of people that went through a lot of struggle and pain. So I'm not trying to minimize that by any means, but I think really looking at internally within them and making sure to go deep enough there, they're not just staying stuck on like the specifics of what happened, but really understanding like what it means to them that this happened and what that means for the vision for what they have in their future. So that's really big. But yes, we can definitely bring in the family to help kind of facilitate that personal work and to talk to their family in different ways. And that's huge, talking to them in different ways than they're used to talking to them, you know, so they probably get used to talking to them about like, you know, conflict comes up or the randomest thing, you know, that the other person says, it brings up all the stuff from the past. And then they're angry about like a very small thing. And then we have to look at that. But we can bring in the family and we do sometimes, but a lot of times that work is just done with the individual once they're older.
Cool. What would some of the steps in the process be with that individual who's just so much resentment for their suffering and for what's going on, and they're really just clinging on so tight to that it's just impacting their quality of life and like, you know, fucking up their future. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, I really am a curious person and I really like to make sure I'm not going ahead of the people that I work with. So I like to ask questions in ways that like are different than they're used to hearing. Because essentially a lot of it comes down to lack of insight because they get so used to it. They get so used to thinking things a certain way. I don't know if you can relate to that, but like, you know, when you get stuck in your head in a pattern of life and you just kind of roll with it for such a long time, that moment where you actually stop yourself and you ask different questions or you're asked different questions, you know, like I remember just even books that, you know, I've read, or it's like when you get a question that makes you stop and think. And, you know, when they have like the typical, like, you know, response where they're going back into their pattern, pulling them back to that original question. And then they want to go back and cycle again to their comfort zone and the ways that they're used to responding and getting stuck in their own head and pointing fingers and saying why life is horrible, all this stuff, and pulling them back to it and helping them really just slow down that pattern, that like typical cycle, and look internally. And for me, that's a really big part of the process, is asking a lot of questions that develop insight, that helps them actually pay attention to the way that they're thinking and how it's impacting their day-to-day. So if they're having resentments that they're holding on to, how does that impact their marriage? How is that impacting the way that they parent? How is that impacting their ability to succeed in their career or, you know, ability to go on their own if that's what they want to do, or how does it stop them in all parts of their lives? And those are the type of things I like to look at and help them see. Like, it's almost like looking at the pain, right, of living their life that way, of continuing to live their life that way. How is it painful for them? Because we're motivated by not experiencing so much pain, right?
Yeah. Which is weird. I mean, like, because there's an addictive nature to all this, you know. It becomes an unconscious cycle and we just keep running the same patterns that are self, you know, self-destruct. I'm like, we think we're trying to do the good thing and avoid pain. And, you know, the paradox of it all is by not confronting this, we're actually just increasing the pain that we have to experience, which like just keeps slowly building. And, you know, it's boiled over likely if they've reached a point where they've had the courage to sit, sit in your chair. But there's, you know, these patterns are so subtle and so damaging. How do you, besides asking inquisitive questions and being curious, how can we help people build better awareness around that, just on how much they're, the role they play in destroying their psyche and their, and just delaying their ability to heal, basically?
I mean, there's a few things that I'm a really big fan of that I work on with my clients. Things like getting out what's in their head on paper. I really love it. And so many people have like this aversion to it, like this idea of like, okay, what's journaling, right? Like we talk about journaling and they've heard it. And, you know, for me, I'm such a big fan because we don't realize how much our mind takes us for this ride. Like, and how much messiness is there. I mean, that's what a lot of this anxiety is anyways. It's just that messiness in our head. And so for me, I work with my clients a lot on writing down what's going on in their head, just a very free flow kind of writing where they're just getting it all out on paper. And there's something that is really special. Once they get over the stigma or telling themselves it's not something that they do or they should do or that has worked for them in the past, which a lot of people say hasn't worked for me, I tried before. Once they get past that and actually, you know, allow themselves to do it, so many things can come out of it because they can actually see the ways that they're thinking. Mm-hmm. They can see the negativity. They can see those patterns. And so they can read it to me in session. They can go over it and read it themselves. They're going to be able to actually see what's going on in their head. And I think that's a really powerful way to see it. So that's one thing. One thing that I really like to help people do.
Yeah, 100% agree, because like we don't, I really liked what you said there about just, we don't understand how messy it all is. And it is really messy, and we run around looking everywhere, all over the internet for cures. And there's no shortage of people without expertise saying, I can cure this. You know, you will cure your anxiety by reading this blog article. And you're going, come on. It's not like, so those expectations are just so absurd, but it's kind of like, that's what I want. That's what I demand. So I really like what you said there. And I know for myself, just like, the importance of being able to sit with your thoughts and get it out and be able to process it and gain some perspective is extremely powerful, because even starting out, a lot of people have never, you know, your whole life is spent, or however long you've been dealing with this, is spent trying to avoid it usually at all costs, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's hallucinating, you know, it doesn't matter. But like, so you're just trying to avoid the thoughts in your head because they're scary. It's a terrifying confrontation. And then like when you do write it down, and it's like certainly a cathartic feeling, albeit it can be a scary one, but it's a process that I think you have to go through to kind of come out the other end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's helping people really see that there's more pleasure in tolerating the anxiety in a moment than there is pain, because then that's where we go to all those quick fixes, whether it's however we avoid the anxiety, right? Whether that's, you know, drinking or like anything we do to avoid it, we stuff it down. Even TV is that, right? Like escape, anything that we do to escape it. But learning to actually see that there's more pain in avoidance and there's more pleasure in tolerating it because of the future gain. And I think that is something that helping people get the buy-in. That's the huge part. is having the future gain, but recognizing that tolerate the pain, tolerating the uncomfort in the moment is so much more pleasurable because you can actually vision where it's taking you and you acknowledge how much pain it is to continue living the life the way that you're living, which is avoidance. Because you feel it. You feel it all the time. You feel anxious all the time. You feel the need to escape all the time. You go into drugs or alcohol. You avoid relationships. You don't have intimacy. Your work suffers. Like all those areas of your life, you feel the pain. So it's really getting that to that heightened level where people could acknowledge it, where people could see it and see more pleasure for like that vision. And so I think it's altering it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we really are great at bullshitting ourselves.
Yeah.
And it is about like looking to the future. And I even wonder, like, is it like sometimes you can get results really quickly. And I think it's like you have to give people a mix, like give that quick hit or a natural high that you can get by doing a breathwork session or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just go a week without alcohol or go a month without alcohol, do yoga 3 times a week, eat really healthy, get hydrated, see how much better you feel. But then there's still the kind of work to go underneath that. And that work is so subtle under the hood that we don't even realize it's going on. Like, and I often think, like, if I didn't do the work I did, you know, like maybe my expectations would be absurd, where I still kind of go like, fuck, I should be further on or whatever, or beat myself up and not really be that kind to myself on occasion. But if I kind of stop and take stock, I'm here going like, well, shit, if you didn't all do all this work, what are the consequences? Would you be even here on this planet anymore? And I just don't think we take stock of that. We just like, we have such absurd expectations of, you know, and of course, social media, yeah, our smartphones, the internet advertising plays a massive role in this, to the point of our detriment, because we just refuse for anything. It's kind of like ties in with entitlement.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really powerful what you said, because it's the truth. We get so stuck on being so hard on ourselves. Like, I feel like there was definitely so many cycles and periods of my life where I just caught myself just being so internally hard on myself. And that shift, and obviously it still happens, but you know, the shift to be so much more aware of what's going on in my mind. And so much more aware of the world, right? Because everyone puts out that social media, there's so much presentation forward, but there's so much underneath that we don't see. Like that presentation of like everything is good or things are okay that is put out into the world, but there's underneath into people's lives that we don't see. And that's something that's really big for like even the teens that we work with. It's there's so much comparisons. There's so much like the underneath, like I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I'm not as liked. I'm not as pretty. I'm not as anything, right? And so so I'm just kind of agreeing with you. It's just something that we do so often, and we see the detriment. But then again, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is like being unkind is your comfort zone, does become someone's comfort zone. It's like this idea of like complimenting yourself, being kind, slowing down like the bully inside, all of that. It's like that's so different for so many people. It takes some work to get there.
We really are trained quite well in being assholes to ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be interested to hear your opinion, because I actually think self-help has a lot to answer for here. I think personal development, like, of course it has its role, and it is very important, But I see so many articles about, like, you've got to be extraordinary, you know, 10 things how to not be a loser, blah, blah, blah. It all, it's, and most of it is written by writers, right? And I would say I'm a writer, right? I write from personal experience. I write from research and stuff like that. I'm not the researcher. And, you know, I believe what I'm saying is valid. You know, so I think everyone kind of has that bias towards what they're putting out there is right. Or maybe that's what works for them, or maybe that's what they need. And there's certainly all sorts of biases in there and avoidance and kind of crap. But I just see so many people with such a huge following just saying, like, this is how not to. The other day I was here going, it was someone who was claiming to be a woke, spiritual, conscious leader, whatever the fuck that is. This is how to scale your woke, spiritual, conscious business to 50K a month. And that's what I'm doing. And the way I'm doing it is by selling a system. So you're going to buy this system off me to contribute to my 50 grand a month. And then you're going to sell essentially this system to someone else. And it essentially becomes a pyramid scheme.
Right.
And I really don't know where I was going with this, but it's just like, that's just one element of this little subsector. And I would say just a subsector within personal development that thinks like everything they're doing is great. And there's so many, like, you know, it's not good enough to be and make six figures anymore. You need to make six figures a month. And like, it's just like the pressure being put on kids. And I even saw, I'll give you another example. I'm taking a month off self-help now because like I've unsubscribed from everything on YouTube because I'm just sick of it. But I just saw another really popular, who is a big name for himself. And the title of the video was like, why only 1% will succeed, or why 99% will be unsuccessful. And you're here going like, Jesus Christ, like, why are you putting out a message like that? Like, that's just simple math. You can't get into the, like, there's no room for 2% of people in the 1% club. And like, you're making that off insane amount of money. And that's what you're telling people success is. But we're not focused, like, we know the research goes, like, of course money is required to live a happy life. That's like, no one's disputing that. And I'd be perfectly happy making 50 grand a month. I'd love it. But I just don't think like putting that kind of pressure and just putting these absurd beliefs out to young, impressionable people and not so young, impressionable people is really counterintuitive. Because I doubt there's like the funny thing to me is like that dude who wrote that video, I doubt very much he has one 1%er watching his videos. So it's like 100% of it, he's offending 100% of his audience. And they're gonna, like, that's their definition of success, like a yacht that can compete with Jeff Bezos' yacht or something.
Yeah, I think it's really, and I know who you're talking about, but I think it's really interesting to, you know, hear a lot of those messages. And I think when I think of personal development and the people that I choose to follow, I enjoy following the people that find the best version of yourself. It's not my definition. It's not what I think you should be like. In other words, success doesn't need to mean make $1 million a year or six figures. It means live a life in a way where you're proud of yourself, where you feel happy to be in your own skin. where you are able to, right, where we're going back to the resentments and all of that stuff, where your past is not leading your future. Find the best version of you, wherever, however you want that to be, and to really look at that. And I think that the difficult ones, the difficult messages come when I have a definition of what you need to be, and therefore you need to follow my definition to get there, versus let's explore within you what's yours, and then the gaps for you to get to where you want to be. And I feel like that difference for me is really big, and really understanding, you know, that component of it.
Yeah, that's so beautifully put. And I think it's like, I wish, like, I obviously, this is just my biases and just people annoying me on the internet that for some reason I just can't, like, tell YouTube ads or anything just to leave me alone with them. But it's something I've taken notice of. And I think, and just more to it is like, you know, like, read 60 books a year and you've got, this is your path to success and blah, blah, blah. And it's, but like, young people are so impressionable. They don't have the wisdom that you possess there. And like, what you just said is nailed it. And it's like going, you know, like, part of your problem might be that you're just trying too hard to achieve too much. Like, as Tony Robbins says, we overestimate what we can achieve in a year, and we underestimate what we can achieve in 5 years or a decade or a lifetime. So we don't have any patience. And it's just, you know, it becomes an identity thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I when I hear him say that, I mean, it's just, I can look back to like my goals, right? And things that I would write and just how much I would have down for that year. And I'm just, there's such an internal pressure of like, I need, like, if I get all of this done now, what does that mean about me? You know, what does that mean about like who I am or my ability to feel good about myself or success? Or, and I think those internal messages are just so big. Being able to say to yourself, like, what is going to feel good to me versus this outside, because I think so much of it is like this outside perception of like what we, if we were to look outside in, like this outside perception of like, you know, am I worthy? Am I good enough? All of those things. So then we place all of this pressure to do massive things within a short period of time because we already want to get there. We already want to get to the other side where we feel good enough. But then what happens with all that pressure? Then we don't get there because of the pressure. Because we get stuck. We get stuck because we place so much on ourselves. And then when you don't actually take those 2 millimeter away kind of Tony Robbins things to say, right? Like with those like steps, when you don't take action, right? Then you're not feeling movement. But it's so hard to feel movement when you place so much internal pressure.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah, for sure. I've just like, I just finished a project there. I was telling you about when we had a brief chat before, but you know, so that like had me immersed in work for 3 months, and that was all I was doing. And it was like, it was great. Cause it, you know, there was a finish line and we were driving through it, and I was working with someone else on it. And it was a really good experience, threw me into action, threw me out of my comfort zone, all those kind of things that are vitally important to develop and grow. But, and afterwards it was like going, ah, shit, we made some mistakes and we didn't really like, and you know, obviously at your primary goal is to help people, especially when it comes to mental health. Your primary goal is to help people, but you need to be able to help yourself and make a profit and everything like that as well. And so we didn't really do that. And so that was kind of a hard thing to grasp, especially coronavirus, where there's so much uncertainty and people are just like, don't have money to spend and afraid of spending. And I think everybody's suffering. And you're here going like, well, I can beat myself up about this and tell myself I'm useless and go down that vortex of self-pity, or I can just kind of like take a week off and go enjoy myself and go surfing and do things that are free and not have to worry about accumulating wealth just to buy stuff.
And I think, are you saying that we didn't really do that in terms of like the profit and all of that that you were hoping to have?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't, you know, tough audience.
You know what though? One thing that I will say about that is absolutely, you can make the choice to go surfing and all of that. And I think that, you know, when you make those kind of choices instead of the path of just like sitting in pity and being hard on yourself or, you know, sitting in like the upset around it, is that you also are going to have the space to see, like, I just did so many things that were different and outside of my comfort zone and had such a beautiful message. And the anxiety kind of support that you're talking about, like, there's so many people out there that you want to help, and you just learned so much value through this experience that you're going to learn through the falls.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there's something really powerful of, like, you know, seeing that, like, all of this is a part of the journey.
Yeah. You know? I couldn't agree more. I mean, failure sucks in many aspects. I don't even like using the word failure, but I have a tendency to be raw and a realist, but also, like, there were so many wins for us out of that. Like, mm-hmm. It was such a huge undertaking. Some of the feedback from people who attended the event was unbelievably positive. So from that aspect, it was brilliant. And you go like, okay, well, like, I've earned it, right? I've earned a break. I don't, like, I could sit back and just like process stuff and think about it, but I don't have to beat myself up and go, you know, because so many people around the world are going, like, they're struggling now in many aspects, but a very large percentage of that struggle is self-inflicted.
Oh yeah. And because you chose to say to yourself, right, I earned that break, because you chose to say that and to think in that way, you're going to take all those lessons. You're going to be able to move forward with that, right? Like, that's like that, you're giving yourself like a really big gift, right? Like, you're going to be able to take that and move forward. But so many times, and I think that for me, I'm looking back, there's many times that I've done this in my life, and I think anyone can relate, but people that are struggling with this right now, is that when you get stuck in all of that, like, okay, well, I didn't, right, my goal was to make this and I didn't do it, or, you know, all of those things that went wrong essentially or didn't go according to plan, you know, it's when you get stuck in all of that, you're going to stop yourself from trying new things. Mm. Like, it keeps you stuck in life, because it's basically like, I went out of my comfort zone, I did all of this and it was scary, and now basically I learned my lesson. I learned to go back to my comfort zone because I don't want to mess up again.
Yeah.
Right? So it's such a powerful thing to kind of work on that mindset, because that's what's going to help you move forward. Like, you're going to be able to tell yourself, like, you're going to want to try something. I don't know if it's this or what, but like to move forward and learn through it and evaluate budgets differently, like whatever it is. But like, yeah, you're going to want to move forward from all of that. And I think that that's something really powerful to kind of give yourself, you know, in all of that. And something that, you know, I for me and like the work that I do and in our practice is something that I really want people to work on and or to explore within themselves, is like, you are your own guiding post. Like, how you talk to yourself, how you think about things, how you respond internally, how much you keep yourself stuck, like, that's going to be whether you move forward or you just stay stuck throughout, you know, life and everything. So
for kind sure. of went on a tangent,
but yeah.
And that's a nice caveat into something. I know, like, so I surveyed about 300 responses I was looking through yesterday, and just, getting a better understanding of people's anxiety and what they're doing to manage it and how they're holding up. And I think one of the questions was like, are you receiving treatment? If so, is it helping? And if not, what's preventing you from doing so? Because that's always a great mystery for me. I'm like, just because treatment can just, like, I know I've experienced bad treatment as well. It can just like expedite the process of something that can be so unbelievably painful and debilitating and hold you back decades in life. So it's kind of like this, what's going on here? And an awful lot of people said, so you kind of like have three splits. Yes, I'm getting help, and yes, it's helping. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not getting help. I don't have money to do so. Yes, I got help in the past, but it didn't help. So now I've given up. They were kind of the three answers that you could aggregate from that one question. And it's like, you know, one way of looking at this, if, like, obviously to the listeners here, I would say is going, okay, it didn't work. Great. That's one less thing or one less professional you have to try.
Right.
Whereas, you know, this learned helplessness becomes this bitch of a problem that can lead to people surrendering to the misery of anxiety or depression for potentially a lifetime.
Yeah. How sad is that? It makes me sad to think about that. Absolutely. And I think that's why I love the work that I do so much and get inspired to hear about the work that you're doing, because it's so sad to stay stuck in that for your life and seeing how it impacts all parts of people's lives. But yeah, that learned helplessness, that kind of, you know, I tried and I'm done. There's nothing I can do about it. It's outside my control.
Yeah. How do you help people overcome that?
I mean, it's a really, you know.
Can you even?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely, you can overcome it. And I think that it's really that internal, like, I believe it's scary in a way to say to yourself, I can do something about this. I can make a change in my life. I can shift. Like, it's scary. But helping people really value that vision, right? Because it's, you know, so much of it, and I think that it gets really difficult when people just really, like, are passionately holding on to this identity of, like, this is it. There's nothing I can do about it. Like, they're passionately holding on to it because it's so uncomfortable to see it another way. But I really think of it as just, like, if I'm taking like a hammer, I'm just like chipping at it. You're just chipping at it from all those different directions and trying different things. I think that the more, we're going back to more personal development, the more personal work, whoever it is that is helping them or trying to help them, does for that in their own lives, the more they're going to be able to actually do the chipping. But we can absolutely work on that, but we have to be able to kind of chip at it one way and then try something different, because they are so stuck on holding on to it. So if we're just going at it one way, then they're not able to shift their mind, because they need more flexibility in their mind. They're inflexible. So you and whoever in working with people that to have this kind of learned helplessness, we need to have flexibility. If that makes sense. We need to be able to try those different things. So in how to do it, I really think being able to ask the right questions in different ways, develop more insight, recognize in areas of their life that we can bring about some doubt to whatever core belief that they have. So if it's a belief of, I'm always going to be poor, or I'm always, or I'm, you know, ugly, or whatever belief, like all those beliefs that they're holding on to, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, right? We're going to have to bring about some doubt to that, some doubt to that core, and kind of shake it up a bit. And so I think that having like different ways to kind of go about and bringing that doubt is really big. And then also like helping them see like the beauty of like what a different vision could be for their life, and mapping that out. Because if we don't have a guiding post, if we don't know where it is that we want to go or what that looks like, nothing is going to really feel exciting. So I think that we're going to, you know, helping them kind of see that in different ways.
Yeah, no, I love how you put that. I guess what I meant by what I said, that's vitally important as well, and that's really great stuff. But it was just more how can we get and hopefully this conversation can help people. But how can we get people to understand that, like, just because you've tried a few professionals or therapies or whatever, and you didn't click with your therapist, and you didn't make progress, that all is not lost. There's still so much you can do. There's so much you can try. And, you know, like, just that little quiver of hope that we get when we just, you know, like, I bought every crazy thing on the internet I could possibly get back in the day, like, oh shit, but this might work. And just, you know, like, every type of massager and whatnot, because headaches were such a prominent part of what I was having to endure. But how do we just like kind of just go, it all is not lost. Your story is not that unique. That there's elements of your life that are certainly unique, but your story is not that unique. And there's thousands of people out there that have walked the same path and have sat with the same belief that there is nothing they can do, or there's nothing anyone can do for them. So this is something like, and that's like the part of self-acceptance that you don't want to go into. Like, that's just like, acceptance is really powerful, but you don't want to be just accepting that this is like, there's nothing you can do to improve your circumstances at the moment, because that couldn't be further from the truth. And I really believe that for anyone that's experiencing any kind of anguish in their life.
So just a clarifying question. So when you ask, like, how do we get them to see that just because they've tried a few things that they're not stuck for good, are you referring to like in therapy? Are you referring to in like the context of somebody that, like, you know, just kind of read something online? Like, what's the context that we want to be able to help them see it? Or is that just a bigger picture question?
I guess just because I know a lot of people listening to this and are, you know, from reading the responses, are like, they're not in a position to accept help. Yeah. They're not, and my belief is that if you don't get help, this is going to be a way more brutal journey than you can imagine. Yeah. And if you do get help and you do have the patience to shop around for the right help, then you're going to expedite the process so greatly. And life is going to get so much better. Like, you don't even imagine, like, if that's how dark a spot you are in right now, you can't imagine how much light you can bring into your life. And that's just that, like the identity crisis, you know, like, yeah, it kind of ties back to what we were talking about with that issue.
Yeah. I think that it's really powerful to acknowledge that there's nothing that we want in our lives that if we don't keep trying differently, that we're not going to be like, that we won't be able to attain. And really helping people like see that, because there's, you know, when you say I've tried these few things, there are, in the percentage of all the things that you've tried this much. You've tried a baby amount of all those things. And can you envision for a moment that maybe you're worth it, that the other 98% of things that you can try, right? And that doesn't mean just different tactics or strategies, but it just means in different ways. It can even be within one, what's, you know, bigger picture, but that you're worth it enough to acknowledge that I can try different things and still get there.
Mm.
Like that internal, like I'm worth it enough. Like I'm worthy enough to do that. And so many people have a hard time saying that, you know, to themselves, because they kind of owned onto this, like, you know, that comfort zone that we were talking about, that identity.
Yes, I'm unworthy now. You know, I don't deserve to be happy. I don't deserve to, this is all I deserve. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But being able to see like that's your comfort. And I actually think that helping them see like, how can you give so much more to the people in your life? Because I think a lot of people are motivated around that. You know, there's such a motivation for relationship and connection. And helping people really see that, okay, you're getting yourself stuck. What are you doing to your wife or your husband? How is this impacting your kids? How are you inhibiting them from growing into what you would hope that they would be? I understand you're stuck, right? And that's something that I try to help people when they're that stuck, right? Is like, I understand you're stuck and you know, you're saying there's nothing you can do, but what about your kids?
Yeah.
What about your partner? And helping them shift and understand like the role that they have for other people in their lives too, I think is really big.
Just kind of remove them from the victim mindset. And just find that leverage to, it's not just about me.
Yeah.
That can be extremely powerful for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Because one of the things that I worry about is when I see these comments come in and I'm just going, I feel so bad for you. But it's like, I also hear, you know, I cannot handle another failure. And I get that when it's so consuming and it's just destroying all quality of life and it's slowly gnawing away in your will to live. And you're just here going like, I've tried and I've tried and I'm just like completely drained of energy and just going at it again. And dealing with another failure, I cannot accept that in my life right now. I just don't think I can cope.
If I hear something like that, the first thing I would say to someone is stop whatever it is that you're trying to go after, and you gotta have a brand new meaning of what self-care is. Like your internal resources to tolerate the bumps aren't there. You need to build that first and foremost.
Yeah, they're like, doing it.
Right. Your internal resources are done. You don't have it in you. So let's stop, because you're going to get to failure, right? Because failure is part of life. Like bumps are part of life. These bumps are going to be in life. So it's going to happen. So what you're saying, I won't be able to deal with another one, but it's going to happen. What's next? What's going to happen then? Right. So instead, there's a complete stop on whatever it is that you're trying to go after. Take care of you. What does that mean? Change things up. What does your morning routine look like? Like, what are you doing in the morning to take care of yourself? What are you doing in any way to take care of you in the midst of dealing with all these failures that are circling your life? Like I would slow down anything else that is on their mind and focus on that first and foremost.
Yeah. And if you're not looking at other kind of alternatives to health in general, like what's your diet, are you breathing correctly? So many people just aren't breathing correctly. And the help they seek out isn't focused on how to breathe right. So there is, you're right, there's so much you can do, and compassion and patience goes an awful long way. I'm a little bit conscious of time, Donna, and I could chat to you about this all day. So just before I let you go, what would be some of the three tips that you would give to someone that's really dealing with debilitating anxiety in their life today?
Three tips that I would give to someone, such a good question. The first one that comes to my mind is whatever you need to do in trying different things, learning how to trust yourself and what that means to you, and trusting yourself to get through those bumps. The second one is be vulnerable, you know, to the people you care about. Let yourself open up, let yourself kind of be seen, because although it's painful and uncomfortable and scary, that connection will help move you forward through the anxiety and through the struggles that you're feeling.
Yeah, that's super important. And just as a caveat to that, I would say, like, I like the way you say, to the people you care about. It doesn't have to be on social media. That's going to work against you more often than not.
Yeah, exactly. I agree 100% to the people you care about. And third, recognize the strength in getting help. There is so much strength. And help can mean so many different things, but get the help. Like, recognize that there is strength in saying, I care enough about myself to reach out. And so that would be the third thing that I would say.
Mm. And that takes unbelievable courage. So when you do it, you should be incredibly proud of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So many people are just terrified to take that step, and it's that step that can turn everything around. So yeah, they're really, really great tips. Donna, where can people find you and connect with you? And
CME Psychological Group is the group practice that I am a part of, and we are doing a lot of telehealth now, as you could imagine. So feel free to reach out and take a look there. We post blogs and all kinds of things on there. You could also find us on Facebook, CME Psychological Group, and I am on Instagram at Dr. Donna Novak.
Okay, cool. And we'll see me psychological. We'll spell it out and put it in the show notes. So,
perfect.
Yeah, that's cool. Anything else you would like to add?
I just thought it's been so nice talking to you. I really appreciate being on and this conversation. It's been really nice. And just kind of putting out there to all the listeners, just that, you know, make sure that you allow yourself the space, you know, to be kind. And I think that's one thing, you know, that I really have that message out in the world. Learn how to be kind. Be kind to yourself. Thank you so much for having me.